Local News, Culture, and NPR.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, artist Willow Gatewood offers verbal expressions on the softer sounds of winter. I engage Don Hamilton in a conversation inspired by Frazzle and Splosh. Don is retired from the National Park Service and offers us some insight on ice formations. Then, Milanville community members share more of their sentiments about the Skinners Falls Bridge. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk coming up on today's Farm and Country. After news headlines from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. A federal judge in New York issued an emergency order overnight blocking Elon Musk's cost-cutting team from accessing sensitive Treasury records. NPR's Amy Held reports the data includes the personal and financial information on millions of Americans.
The judge ordered Musk and his team to destroy any material already downloaded from the Treasury. Its systems process trillions of dollars in spending, including Social Security benefits, tax refunds, and more. The ruling is in response to a lawsuit filed Friday by 19 attorneys general, led by New York's Letitia James.
To stop this unprecedented and unauthorized attack and to protect your personal information.
Trump and Musk say, without providing evidence, that they are going after waste and fraud. The judge's order is temporary, but marks the latest success in the legal battle to stop the Trump administration's efforts to radically change parts of the U.S. government. Amy Held, NPR News.
In a separate case, a federal judge temporarily blocked the administration's efforts to dismantle USAID, handing a reprieve to some 2,200 staffers who face being put on administrative leave overnight. California Governor Gavin Newsom signed legislation Friday to make $50 million available to sue the Trump administration. CAP Radio's Megan Myskowski in Sacramento reports.
The funding will support the state and nonprofits in lawsuits over federal policies that conflict with California's more progressive stances, including on issues related to the environment, access to abortion, and LGBTQ plus rights. One bill designates $25 million to support legal services for immigrants, including in deportation cases. Newsom says funding set aside for litigation related to immigration is not intended to support non-citizens who have been convicted of serious or violent felonies. Republicans in the California Assembly say the measures take away from dealing with wildfires and California's high cost of living. Newsom signed the bills after meeting with President Trump in Washington, D.C., where they discussed aid for recent wildfires in California. For NPR News, I'm Megan Myskowski in Sacramento.
The three Israeli citizens released by Hamas today appeared to be in worse condition than the 18 hostages who had previously been freed under the Gaza ceasefire agreement. Stephen Brisley spoke to the BBC about his brother-in-law, Eli Sharabi.
You can see that his wrists were skinny, but what really hit home was his face, his gaunt, the darkness under his eyes, the light gone from his eyes, the light that is always there with Ellie. And I think that's the most distressing part of seeing what these 491 days have done to him.
The three men looked malnourished when they were paraded by Hamas fighters on a stage before being handed over to the Red Cross. In exchange for the release, Israel freed 183 Palestinian prisoners. This is NPR News.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll take a voyage to the bottom of the sea. Also, the new exotic sounds of vibraphonist Mark Riddle. And from Sweden, Ixtawela, on their album Call of the Islands. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Why not join me where the music's shaken, not stirred? The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution cfosny.org, and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, artist Willow Gatewood offers verbal expressions on the softer sounds of winter. I engaged Don Hamilton in a conversation inspired by Frazzle and Splosh. Don is retired from the National Park Service and gives us some insight on ice formations. Then Milanville community members share more of their sentiments about the Skinners Falls Bridge. But first, here is Keith Hubbard with a Star Talk report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farm and Country.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. The James Webb Space Telescope has been dazzling us with its stunning images since mid-2022. Recently, researchers used data from the telescope to refine the measurement of the Hubble constant. The Hubble constant is the expansion rate of the universe. For many years, this value has been faster than what is estimated by standard cosmology models. The results from the telescope were consistent with earlier results, which suggests the discrepancy between the data and the models was not caused by human or instrument error, but by an unknown feature in the universe. The universe's expansion rate is expressed in kilometers per second per megaparsec. 1 megaparsec is 3.26 million light years. Put another way, the Hubble constant measures the velocity in kilometers per second that an object 1 megaparsec from Earth is moving away from us. Cosmology models place the Hubble constant between 67 and 68 kilometers per second per megaparsec. The refined measurements of the Hubble constant produce an average of 73 kilometers per second per megaparsec. The expansion rate of the universe is accelerating faster than the models predict, and scientists have yet to determine why this is so. By confirming earlier observations of the Hubble constant, the James Webb Space Telescope has shown scientists that there is still much to learn about the universe. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
Wintertime can bring a silence that is not the absence of something, but the presence of heightened awareness. Have you ever immersed yourself in silence and found not less, but more? I am aware of the soft sounds that are normally drowned out, of textures and colors, movement and patterns, especially on ice. It turns out that others share this sensitivity. Willow Gatewood is an environmental scientist, writer, and interdisciplinary artist. She's currently in Narrowsburg, New York, through February for some exhibition and performances.
Ice whispers winter hymnals, a psalm that lives when we shut our lips and hold breath in our bellies. River, inspired by the day, becomes a dancer, fluid in the space between sun-kissed atoms of air. It is this softer side of winter, birthed from a star speaking to still water, that reminds me I am moving even when my body is silent. I am changing, and even the song of the darkest season is ridden by light.
Willow Gatewood is looking for a couple of hours of odd jobs and short-term work within walking distance of Narrowsburg. You can find her online, willowgatewood.com. How about these words, Frazzle and Splosh? Have you ever heard of them? For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr, speaking with Don Hamilton. Don is a member of our Upper Delaware River community. He's retired now from the National Park Service, and I thought it would be nice to have a conversation with him. We share some common reverence for some of the aspects of the river. Don, please introduce yourself and tell us where you live in our community.
Well, thanks for having me, Rosie. My name is Don Hamilton. I live in Milanville, Pennsylvania, and Calkins Creek flows along one side of my property, and so kind of feel a little bit connected to the river right there. But yeah, I am retired here as the Natural Resources Program Manager for the National Park Service on the Upper Delaware River. I've lived in the area for 32 years, and for most of it, I've been in that position here with the National Park Service. I came here to take a job with them. The Delaware River is such a gem, and I've really come to appreciate it and all the values it represents. And I've had the privilege of working on it and learning about it and its natural resources over the years. And so I hope to maybe share a bit of that knowledge and to help develop people's awareness, understanding, and appreciation for this magnificent resource we have here in the Upper Delaware River.
Yes, I'm honored to sit with you because I know you have this knowledge and I'm anxious to share it with our audience. Every once in a while, we bump into each other at different events and we talk about silly, important things like the ice forming on the river. And we actually had a lovely conversation on River Road one time about it was very early winter and the ice was just forming. And we shared an experience that we've both have. I learned from the Hocker family, which has a lot of history in Milanville, that the word splosh is the sound that ice makes on the river when it's just forming. It's a skin. And you said to me you had a word, I believe it was frazzle. So let me hear about your word, frazzle.
I've always been kind of fascinated how ice forms on this river. It's different than how it forms on lakes, which is what I experienced where I grew up in Michigan. But on a flowing river like this, you have very cold weather, super cooled conditions. You will have a type of ice called frazzle ice that begins floating along the surface. And these are ice crystals that kind of form little rafts, and it kind of looks slush-like. But where those get caught on objects, they'll kind of lock in place, and then you'll have surface ice freeze in place on the river. And that day I met you on River Road, Rosie, and we were looking at the river ice. We were looking at the upstream extent of it from Narrowsburg, about a quarter mile upriver from the bridge. And this is typically how it freezes. This frazzle ice floating on the surface will catch on some object or kind of get some constricted area like the Narrowsburg Bridge, and it will back up and form upriver from there. And we were looking at kind of the leading edge of that at the time. And so it's kind of a different process than on a lake, but it's kind of fascinating and something that I have always taken an interest in, having done a fair amount of ice fishing growing up. River ice is much different than on a lake. It's uneven and it's kind of jumbled up in places that you really have to be very cautious about getting out on river ice, and because it can be uneven and it has a flowing current beneath it, and you really need to know what you're doing. So, and there are open leads on the river where you will have areas that aren't ice covered, and it's just a very dangerous thing to try to cross the river under those conditions. And I've seen a few deer try to do that, and not all of them survived. So there are places like the Big Eddy in Narrowsburg where the area on the New York side will, where you don't have much, if any, flow of water, you'll have thicker ice form like it does on a lake. And I haven't been out on that ice, but I've seen ice fishermen out there. I would venture that ice is probably a good 10 inches thick now of hard ice. So it's that little corner of the Big Eddy is probably safe to be out on. But any river ice, you should really go out with a spud bar and check out how solid it is before you venture out on it. And never try to cross this river, even though it looks like it's fully ice covered. It's a dangerous thing to try to do.
Well, that being said, we have a little more reverence for George Washington and his troops trying to cross the Delaware. Yeah.
That was in December, Christmas Eve, and it was downriver. But if you look at pictures, paintings depicting that, you'll see them crossing and fending off ice, chunks of ice with poles. And I've often thought that this is, you know, maybe an example of climate change. In December, we don't normally see that much ice, that thickness on the river. Of course, that was well downriver south of us, but still in December, we don't very often see weather that cold and ice that thick having formed on the river.
Do you have some fond memories of being in Michigan? What was it like as a child? Was it a lot different than winters here?
It was dependably more snowy because I grew up in Traverse City in the northwest part of the Lower Peninsula on the west side of the state. So we had a lot of lake effect snow there. So it was dependably more snowy. But other than that, the weather wasn't that much different in terms of being cold. You do have more sunny days here in the wintertime and less snow, and but temperatures are similar. A lot of things about that area and this area are similar in terms of the climate and the plants and animals. And but this area is more mountainous.
You probably share this also. If you're lucky enough to live here and the winter's been cold and there's lots of ice on the river, there's a special effect when the ice breaks. There's an actual ice out that people stand on the bridge and watch these chunks of ice floating down. Have you ever experienced that and the sound that makes?
Oh, yeah, that's kind of memorable. In fact, I thought it was kind of interesting when I first moved here and saw people setting up lawn chairs on the Narrowsburg Bridge and for the ice out. It was an event that really drew a lot of people. And I have stood out on the Skinner's Falls Bridge and felt that ice going through below, and actually the bridge would bounce a little bit from the force of it. But that's why the Roebling Bridge has these ice breakers that extend out from the piers to break up the ice and prevent any damage to the bridge piers. And all these bridge piers in the river are designed to cut through the ice. Some of them have a piece of metal on the upstream side of the bridge pier to protect them from the ice. So it's, definitely something that has to be designed for a river like this and ice out.
And there's more reverence that we can have for the bridges in our area. If they're over 100 years old, 100 winters of ice and snow. That's pretty amazing.
It is. Yeah, bridges have to be designed for those conditions. And yeah, there's special engineering that goes into that. And they have a predictable lifespan because of that.
We'll hear more from community member Don Hamilton on Radio Catskill. He's eager to share his knowledge about the ecosystems pertaining to the Delaware River. Let's segue now as we continue to share sentiments regarding the Skinner's Falls Bridge. On Sunday, January 12th, members of our Delaware River Valley community gathered inside the Union Building in Narrowsburg, New York, a large red brick structure that was once a Sullivan County school. The Delaware Hall was buzzing with folks sharing music, poetry, and sentiments in celebration of the Skinner's Falls Bridge that stands in Milanville, Pennsylvania. Built in 1902, the Skinner's Falls Bridge in Milanville is listed on the U.S. Register of Historic Places. Like anything else that's over 100 years of age, it's in need of maintenance and repair. But the Skinner's Falls Bridge is in danger of being torn down and not replaced. There are so many people that want this bridge to remain part of our Milanville community. Because it has unique architectural and structural ornamentation, the Skinner's Falls Bridge represents historic value to the Delaware River Valley and the Milanville Historic District. I spoke with many participants who expressed their cherished sentiments.
Okay, I'm Pam DeMann. I live about a mile up the hill from the bridge. And for 22 years, it was our pathway to the closest gas station, post office, pizza, and general store. So we miss that. And for a lot of times, it served as a viewing place for visiting friends and neighbors who were canoeing or tubing down the river. But a year and a half ago, it was the starting place for my husband's final journey, my husband and our dog. After his memorial service, the immediate family, children and grandchildren, went to the bridge, and each said a few words, really lovely, and tossed a handful of the ashes off the bridge. It sparkled as it was going down, as it hit the water. Each handful was accompanied by a group of fish swimming along with it. And when everybody had finished, we looked around. There was a woodchuck trying to join us on the bridge. No eagles, but a woodchuck would be more like my husband's personality.
And his dog helmet.
Yes, and it was his ashes and his dog's ashes. Yes, it was perfect for us as we were thinking, what would we do with the ashes? And yeah, it was very good.
Oh, Mike Ranzi from Milanville. My wife and I, Tracy, raised our kids swimming on underneath the bridge. And they all learned to swim there. And it's a special place for us, and the bridge is very special to us, too. And I'd like to see them restore it. And I think it'll help maintain the quality of the town of Milanville to keep the traffic limited to cars and smaller vehicles and not having trucks coming through such a narrow little quaint village. That's my point of view.
My name is Chris. Chris Ferrelli. I grew up about 3 miles away from the Skinner's Falls Bridge up River Road. And my childhood was filled with memories of going to the bridge with my dad and the rest of my family and walking the bridge, or sometimes we would be driving from Damascus to Narrowsburg, and instead of taking 97 down, we would just take River Road, cross over the bridge, maybe do that a couple of times, and then continue on our way. So it just filled all of our childhoods with wonderful memories, and it's a beautiful landmark for the community, and it'll be a shame to lose it. So I hope there's a way.
Now, Chip was your father. He was a photographer. Do you remember any photographs that he might have taken?
I don't recall any specific photos on the bridge, but what I will say is my father, he passed away in 2022, and one of the last times we actually went out shooting together, we went out to Skinner's, and we parked in the park service lot by the bridge. We walked back and forth over the bridge in the middle of winter, and then we went down to the rocks at Skinner's Falls, and we, in his style, a beautiful black and white style of long exposure, he shot water flowing over the rocks at Skinner's. I'm not sure, we actually haven't developed that film yet, but I imagine some of those photos must have the bridge in the background, and we're going to go and find them. At least that's my hope. That's a very, very special memory to me, and the bridge is very involved in that, so...
Thank you so much for sharing that.
Hi, I'm the Reverend Laurie Stewart, and I'm the publisher of the River Reporter. And the one thing that strikes me about this, what's happening with the bridge, is just how important it is that people get the information that they need. And I think that it's a very important key. I mean, one of the things that people are wondering about is, you know, why didn't we hear that the bridge was deteriorating before? And then the River Reporter, of course, is looking at, you know, the different reports. But access to information that is based on, you know, the community needs and accurate information, I'm just so struck with how destructive, like, misinformation is, and also information that's coming because it supports an action. And so I think that one of the things that's so important for people is that they stay informed, and stay informed by reading reporting or listening to reporting where those journalists are just trying to tell people the information that they need to live more fully and to be actualized and to make good decisions in their communities.
Yes, Lori, I completely agree with you and understand. But I remember when the bridge was closed in 2016, not just 2020. And I said, I bet the River Reporter would have documented this. So I went to the archives of the River Reporter and found several articles. And I want to thank you for that, because I said, I can rely on this information. I believe Isabella Braverman wrote one of the articles. There were several back in 2016 and the subsequent years. So you're correct. And thank you for reminding the audience. And I'm just so proud to know that for 50 years that you've been giving this community a vehicle for communicating, and you continue to go.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and those people who don't subscribe, now really is the time. It's really important that we support local media and accurate information.
Thank you so much for your comments and your work. You can view all the January 12th Skinner's Falls Bridge Celebration event performances on the WJFF Radio Catskill Facebook page. More information on the history of Skinner's Falls Bridge is available online, tomrue.net/sfbridge, and DamascusCitizensForSustainability.org.
This bridge has crossed a great divide of history in the making, a world where future hopes collide and dreams are for the taking. If we change the story, the bridge will take us there. We can save our future or build a bridge to nowhere. Isn't it worth saving? Isn't it worth saving? Isn't it worth saving? Save it all from the wrecking ball. Save it all from the wrecking ball.
We hope that you enjoyed our show this week, with production by Radio Catskill volunteers Keith Hubbard and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guests, Willow Gatewood, Don Hamilton, and Milanville members Pan Demand, Mike Ranzi, Chris Farelli, and Lori Stewart for sharing their sentiments on the Skinner's Falls Bridge. Big thanks goes to Joanne and Dan Brinkerhoff from Poison Love Band for their music used in today's show. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill. Listen to us on air and on your smartphone. Stream us live on our webpage, wjffradio.org. We are Radio Catskill, local news, culture, conversations, and NPR.